Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Aris Meyer podcast. I am joined today by a longtime friend from the Bay Area who I met many, many years ago as a young child in the Unification Church. He is my good friend, Dave Dufour. How you doing, Dave?
Aris, it's a real pleasure to talk to you today. I have the distinct honor of being by far the least talented person on your pod.
Oh my God. And he's humble, ladies and gentlemen.
And yeah, I look forward to spending time with you. It's also nice to know that there's other people who grew up in a cult who have a podcast who talk about stuff other than growing up in a cult.
Yeah. It's like my, I try to avoid talking about it unless it comes up naturally. Unless either the person, I know the person that way, or like a story is involved. Otherwise, I just put it on the little bio to kind of get it out of the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, so let's take it back to the first time we met. I have in my mind the exact moment I met you. Do you remember?
I have this distinct memory of sitting in an RV and seeing like you and Dannery, and just like my mind was completely blown. First of all, I think you were the only like 14-year-old I knew at that point in my life who had like a distinct style. You also had a bunch of Wu-Tang stuff. I had no idea who Wu-Tang was at the time, so that definitely sparked my curiosity.
Let's go.
And I'm sure we'll get into it, but I think like when you're a teenager and you have like a atypical childhood or you have some challenging experience in your life, it's almost like Gaydar. Like people that have had like atypical childhood experiences can just identify people immediately.
100%.
In some ways, this sort of like trauma gaydar.
Traumdar
was definitely firing in full effect. And that's sort of like my general impression of meeting the one and only Aris Meyer.
All right, now let me tell you about my first memory of you, bro. So we're in this RV, and I think we had all gone up to Northern California where you live, and we were like, we decided to do a church thing with this all the Southern California and Northern California people, I think to go whitewater rafting or something like that.
Okay.
So we were going somewhere like out in the wilderness. So we all got in like the same RV, kind of two groups of people, some of which knew each other and some that didn't. And I remember sitting across from you, and I didn't really know you. So I was like saying hi, you know, whatever. And then it got quiet. And then at a certain point, you took out like sunscreen and you put sunscreen on each of your knees, and you like watched the sunscreen race down your legs, and you started kind of like narrating it like it was like a horse race or something. And I looked at Dannery and I like whispered, I was like, who the fuck is this guy, dude? Like, what is like, what is happening? But after like that trip, getting to know you and talking to you, I just realized you're like one of those people that doesn't give a Frenchman's fuck about what people think about him. You're here to have a good time. You're going to say your opinion. Like, you're like me. You're just like an out loud vocal, like, I don't know. You're like a fat Italian Guido stereotype, like I am, kind of, even though we're not. Neither one of us is. We just have the opinions. And
well, I think there's this thing that happens where, you're just like really uncomfortable with silence, or with like, you want people to like you, so you feel like you have to entertain them. And I think that's basically like what my teenage years were. It's just like, look, nobody's having a good time. Let's just make this happen. Like, by sheer force of idiocracy, let's just turn the volume up on this situation.
Hell yeah.
It took me a long time to realize that like most of that is a defense mechanism. Because it's easier to just exist in a very kind of characterized version of yourself. It's easier to turn the volume up to 11 than it is to like deal with how you really feel about yourself sometimes.
100%. I know during those times when we were doing like, you know, whatever church workshops or things like that, like I was 100% doing that, trying to like hide my own, you know, pain or like low self-esteem by being like loud and proud and super, you know, the guy at the front of the church that was like holier than thou, and like trying to, for sure I had that same kind of thing too, where you just like trying to project this image of how you want people to treat you and like how you want them to see you.
It's only like a traumatized person who literally spends time thinking about the way that they are perceived by people without ever asking those people.
Yep.
Right.
100%.
Like, you don't have the confidence to say like, hey, I care about you as like a person independent of this weird situation where I'm entertaining you. And I hope that we can be friends outside of this weird charade.
Yeah, that ain't happening. So I met you then. And over the years, I ended up getting to know you pretty well from just like pretty much always doing summer camps. Like you were a staple figure in the winter and summer organization of like the church retreats and camps. So over those years, I kind of got to know you as like a fellow sports fan, just someone that had like the thing I liked about you. I really like when people have opinions about things, like strong opinions. There's some people in life where you say, what's a better color, blue or yellow? And they'll go, well, I don't know. It's an impossible question. And the thing about I like about you is you're like the kind of guy that's like, hey, Dave, what's a better color, blue or yellow? You'll be like, yellow, and you can't change my mind. Here's why.
Harris, I'm going the exact opposite direction. Yellow and orange are competing for the least valuable colors. There is no there's very little menswear in either color because we don't need them.
Let me tell you something. I'm a Steelers fan and a Lakers fan, so I've worn a lot of that unflattering color my life, dude. A lot of yellow.
I mean, the Lakers yellow works because purple is probably the most underrated color.
True. True. Purple is amazing. But yeah, so that's kind of like how our relationship started was that way. Mostly like a weird friendship through like camp and stuff, but also I lived in the Bay for a year. And that was like a really cool time where I kind of got to hang out with you like in person outside of the religious arena.
What year was that?
2002 or three.
Okay.
One of those years. I think you were going to Chabot. Yeah, I was just out of high school. I had done my missionary trip, and then like halfway through that, I was like, this is the worst.
Calling sleeping in office parkways missionary is a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. Well, I don't like to, you know, I didn't want to. That's its own podcast, but that's my way of politely not saying what it really was. My couple months of indentured servitude. But that was a cool year. Like I did that, and then I worked for a year to buy my first car. And then after I bought that car, I moved up to the Bay for a year, and I lived with Paul, and kind of it was my first time not living in Southern California. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a permanent resident. And it was cool. Like, I really like the Bay a lot. I like the vibe. I like the people. As a hip hop fan, the Bay has a very distinct style and culture. Mm-hmm. With E-40 and Mac Dre and Keek the Sneak and like the whole hyphy movement. So I was really excited to live up there and talk to people about that kind of music. And even at the job I worked up there, it was a kind of a shitty job at a Noah's Bagels. And the greatest day of working there was E-40 came in and getting to meet E-40, and I was just like, I geeked so hard. But it was like in this rich neighborhood where I rented a room, so it was kind of weird. You know what I mean? Like, it's all these people around them were like millionaires and billionaires. They didn't care, but I was just like, oh my god.
Right.
So I really like the Bay, man. I liked it up there, and then after I lived up there, I moved back down here, and then I kind of didn't do as much church stuff, so I stopped seeing you as often. You're not really a social media guy, so there was no real contact.
I'm not really a social person. Like, I'm like a, you know, like some people like talk to their friends every day.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to doing the podcast, like I'm a, like every 6 month friend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to text you, I don't want to call you, let's just go get food when you're in the area. So some of my best friends, like, I'll see twice a year, and part of that is because like I was homeschooled and I was like very lonely, like in my early to late adolescence. And like, it just became normal for me to just like not talk to anybody or interact with people. And I kind of like, you know, through Take the Rope, I've kind of like learned that, oh, life is better when you like talk to your friends a couple times a week.
Take the Rope is your podcast, right?
Take the Rope is our podcast, which is really just a fertile soil for guests to eventually realize they should have their own podcast.
was that a humble brag?
No, like half of our, every time a guest comes on, I'm like, you know what? You should just do your own podcast because.
Yeah, it was, I had so much fun the first time I did your podcast because it's like, you're literally just talking to people that you already like about things that you already like. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, your podcast is primarily a sports podcast. So I know if I go on there, you, Chris and Mopolo, like we're going to talk shit and have fun and it's going to be like a good conversation. You know what I mean? It's not going to be boring or I'm not going to be talking about shit that I don't really care about. And that's what kind of inspired me, that and my friend Akina inspired me to do my own podcast, which is the best. Like, I love it so far, just talking to people and bringing the world interesting individuals. Like, this is great, man. But a lot of that came from just from being on a show with you guys. Just, yeah.
No, I mean, I think you have a ton of talent and I think your podcast is a great idea. When you do a sports podcast, like, people have to listen to it immediately because in 48 hours it becomes irrelevant.
Hmm.
Your podcast actually has like a chance because you can, you know, your conversations are going to be durable.
So you graduated high school, you graduated, or where did you go to college?
I went to Chabot. Mm-hmm. Look, I know you don't want this take, but community college is a lie.
Uh-oh.
Community college, they tell you it's cheaper. What they don't factor in is that it's not a two-year program. You're going to be there for 4 fucking years.
Hmm.
You're going to start as a freshman. You're going to think you want to be a dentist or whatever it is you want to be. And then you're not going to get any classes that you need to actually pursue that. And you're going to be taking weightlifting and a few art history classes because that's all you're going to be able to get.
Uh-huh.
And you're just going to flounder there for ever. Bro, it took me like 5 years to get out of Chabot.
Really? Did you have a like when you're professionally, you're a chiropractor, but was that in your mind when you started community college?
I don't think so. I don't think when I started community college, I had like a plan. Maybe mm-hmm. I was going to be a business major.
Did you think about like jobs? Because I know for me, because of the church, I didn't even think about going to college. I was just like, well, I guess I'm doing church stuff for my life.
Oh God.
Did you have like a clear, like, well, I'm not doing that. I'm going to get a job.
No, I was doing like youth ministry. I had no like, also another hot take. Everyone that the church hires as second gen to be in the church leadership is basically, a 25-year-old first gen, like no interesting ideas, no capacity to like actually make this cult a health. Here comes my son. What's up, Mateo? This is like a Take the Rope tradition where my kids come on the pod.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, no, I had no like plans of working for the church. I was doing like volunteer work and that was enough.
Mm-hmm. So you're in community college and you kind of not sure where to go.
No, I didn't have a plan. I just figured I should go to college because what else was I doing? I was also like an assistant preschool teacher, so that was like my job. And then I went to school and I didn't really study. Like, I had terrible like study habits. I had no idea how to study, so I was just kind of like flying by the seat of my pants. And then eventually 5 years later
5 years later
5 years later, I got to Cal State Hayward. And this is where the real lie of community college comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you get to like an actual university that has like a plan, you can get out of there. So yeah, I know at some point I was working. Okay. I don't really, how does this work? So it's at one point when I'm working at, when I'm in community college, I decide to get like a real job. And I start selling gym memberships at Bally's Total Fitness in San Leandro.
Let's go.
Yeah. And I was doing that, like, I was going to school like 8 to noon. And then I was working like noon to 9 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I was terrible at that job. I was just like,
what really? That's, I feel like you could, you'd be a good salesman.
No, no. I hate, like, I hate selling stuff.
Yeah.
Like someone really needs to like come to the gym 3 days a week. You have to sell them like a $70 a month membership with special features that they're never going to use. After I left, the stock price of Bauer Total Fitness totally collapsed. It was worth like $24 a share. Mm-hmm. And then there was fraud. And then like someone investigated, realized like most of these memberships are fake, which I could have told you in 5 seconds.
Yeah. Because
I worked in sales there. Like, oh my just God. Like attaching random citizens to people's memberships to make them more expensive. It was really shady.
Dang, but, dude.
It was a great experience because that was the first time I was like around people who like weren't in the church and mm-hmm. didn't have the same beliefs, had different backgrounds. I think there was like 6 or 7 salesmen and like 5 of them were black guys. One guy was like El Salvadorian and another guy was Mexican. And I was like the only white guy. And I think every single white person in America should be stuck in a room with people who aren't white for a year. It like totally changed my life.
Mm-hmm. It's 100% true, bro. My first job ever was at a Little Caesars in a Kmart. And, you know, like when you graduate high school, like you think you're hot shit, you think you're cool, you know, you got the clothes, whatever, whatever. But food service humbles you. And I feel like food service, you also like the people you're working with, like you said, are maybe not people that you're used to being around, depending on your situation. Mm-hmm. And you just like, for me anyway, I was like so blown away. I was working with like an old Mexican dude. He was like late 70s, bro. And this is like at a Little Caesars pizza place, but he was the funniest dude, always on time, took joy in what he did. I worked with, you know, like ex-cons, people from rehab, like, you know, Little Caesars, not exactly, you know, we're not getting the top of the pops, Little Caesars and Kmart, but you just learn like to appreciate people, especially because when you're on the other side of the counter and you see how like terrible people are, then it's like a big shock, you know, like somebody's $5 pizza got messed up, so they're going to come in and throw it on the ground and act crazy or, you know, whatever, like so much bullshit happened or just arguing with people over, you know, you didn't put enough cheese on this, whatever, hamburger, whatever stupid thing. But anyway, it like instills, I think, a sense of like community and definitely empathy to do those kind of jobs.
I mean, I literally like got a PhD in rap music working there.
is that where your love for hip hop came from?
I mean, I grew up like listening to like alternative, and then the next station over was like KMEL, like the hip hop and R&B station. So I definitely had like a surface level knowledge of hip hop, but working there, like basically people were just giving me CDs and I was like a sponge. I like had no exposure to anything other than like my narrow point of view on the world. And mm-hmm. I had time. Like I wouldn't even listen to songs. I would just turn albums on and I would just listen to albums. I would listen to whole discographies just like front to back. Cause what else mm-hmm. was I doing? Right.
And, hit me with some of, what were you listening to? Who were some of the names?
It was basically like a 90s hip hop, situation. Like I also lived like a block and a half away from Rasputin, so all these CDs were like $1.50.
Oh yeah, so Rasputin's dope.
Yeah, like all of Nas, all of Biggie, most of Jay-Z. I listened to like Reasonable Doubt probably 150 times that year.
Classic album.
All the way through the Black Album. I mean, it's not like I was getting into the weeds. I was basically listening to like the biggest 5 rappers of all time, basically.
Yeah, yeah, those are all like top super famous popular albums or yeah. artists. Yeah. But who stuck with you? Are there any artists that you like you've stayed listening to since then? Or
I mean, I kind of fluctuate, but really what I'm here to talk about with you is Tupac.
Okay. We could talk Tupac.
I'll talk to you about Tupac.
Okay.
This is not my time to shine.
What do you want to know? What do you want to talk about?
I just think Tupac, I have a couple of takes on Tupac. Tupac might be like the most overrated rapper of all time.
Oh, here we go.
He might be the most overrated rapper of all time. He also might be the most underrated person in culture of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He might be like the most, Tupac might be the most talented person that's ever lived.
I would agree and disagree with almost everything you said. Like, I could see both sides. He has a famous quote where he says that he might not be the person that changes the world, but he guarantees he'll be the spark that creates that change. And I think that his example, like, he's directly the grandfather of so many people's styles, of so many people, like, doing more than just making music. You know, he was the kind of dude that was like super hard and tough, but at the same time, super soft and nurturing. You know, he came from like such a hard life, and his role models when he was growing up were, you know, people that were freedom fighters.
Right.
So he's like one of the most interesting people. And he's also like a childhood hero, you know, because he made songs that like just touched me almost immediately. You know, when I was young and I was listening to Unconditional Love or Dear Mama or Keep Your Head Up, or just reading his like poems, like as a man, when you're growing up, especially as a sensitive man, you're taught, you know, you gotta be tough. You can't talk about your feelings. You know, you have to like, it's all about how you look, your pride, whatever.
Right.
And I've always been a very sensitive kid. Like, my mom wasn't around for most of my life. So I had like, you know, I've always felt like very lonely, you know, no self-esteem, none of that. So Tupac was like, when I was listening to Tupac, I could connect and resonate with like the sadness, but also the hope. And also like, he gave me like a persona to attach myself to, of like being tough, of thug life, of pride in yourself. And, you know, so like, to me, he's a culture. He's more than just an artist. And I think that's why he's like immortalized kind of too by the younger generation. Cause I don't think like Kiss today, I wonder how many songs they would even know. They know who he is because he's a cultural icon, but I don't know that, you know, like, I mean, they probably don't even know that Changes didn't come out when he was alive. You know what I mean? Like, they don't know.
I mean, the timeline is really hard. Like, as two kids who like grew up in California in like the mid to late 90s, like, Tupac was just saturated the whole experience of music. Like, I was listening to some of his albums the last few days getting ready to talk about it, and literally it feels like 50% of his discography was played on the radio all the time.
Mm-hmm. A lot of it was.
Every third song was just on the radio, and it was almost like this Tupac was almost like this omnipresent force. Like, whether you were a fan of hip-hop, whether you listened to rap, like, you couldn't like go through your day without hearing five or six Tupac songs. It was just this completely ubiquitous thing that was wild. And, you know, it might correlate, of course it correlates with him being murdered. And then, you know, once you, unfortunately in this culture, once you die, you basically reach a God level of, of fame. So I think maybe that's why his music was so omnipresent, because we're basically all mourning this this fucking immense talent.
He's definitely immortalized forever. But if you're honestly a fan, I don't think all of his music is good. In fact, there's a large portion of his music that's not good, I would say.
Can we talk about the complete trash compactor from Star Wars that is the features on all of his tracks?
Are you talking about his friends? Are you talking about like his...
Features are terrible. When somebody features now, it's like Kendrick Lamar and here comes Lady Gaga to sing a hook or something. Yeah. You know, like, there's this sort of incestuous feature culture now where talent is featuring on talent.
Mm-hmm.
Tupac was basically just having like his high school friends on these records.
He had his boys.
These features are brutal.
He had his boys. He had the Outlaws, but he had some big name features that were really good. Like, he had a song with Bone Thugs. He had a song with Snoop. He had a song with Dre. So he had like some all time classics. But yeah, mostly a lot of those albums that came out after he died were like his verses that they used, and then the Outlaws made the albums. So that's why it's so heavy with those guys who, okay, you know, that like, yeah, if you listen to his discography, like it's very different, I think, from like his life and his death, like the way that they tried to like kind of change his music, and they incorporated a lot of the stuff he had already done into the new music. So if you're a fan, you already know. I wonder if Heaven Got a Ghetto and Changes have the same verse in it, you know, like the, if you're a fan, you know. But that's the difference, I think, with him and like Biggie, for example. Biggie only had two albums, and to me personally, almost every track on those Biggie albums is still good. Whereas Tupac is like maybe 30% is trash, and then, but his hits are like timeless, immortal. To me, they're you know, gospel hits.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, Biggie didn't have a chance to make a bad record.
Yeah.
Like, if something terrible happens to Nas after Stillmatic, then, then, you know, people have this sort of, I don't know, you know, like, getting murder does things to your persona.
Sure.
If Jesus isn't crucified, we don't know who he is, man. Like,
that it's true. It's funny. There was an episode of The Sopranos about that, where they, Bobby Baklava meets this rapper, and like he wants to get more famous. So he pays Bobby Baklava to shoot him, but then he accidentally shoots him in the ass. So he like, everyone's just making fun of him, but it's true, man. Like people, there's something more powerful about attaching yourself to like a story, you know, like 50 Cent was, people didn't really know him. And then he got shot a bunch of times. And then he came out with like, you know, Get Rich or Die Trying. And everyone was just like, who the fuck, like, holy shit, you know, because it adds like a something special to your character, I guess, whoever you are. And that wasn't really a thing before. Like, I guess there was some gimmicks in like early hip hop, but when you listen to like KRS-One or the Lord Rakim or guys like that, they're just rapping and they have like a message and they have something to say, but there's no real gimmick. They're just giving you what they're selling, you know what I mean?
When you listen to like East Coast rap versus sort of like Dr. Dre and the G-Funk era and Death Row, like East Coast rap, like mid to late 90s, is not musical. East Coast rap is like it's almost like spoken word over really repetitive beats, right?
I don't know if I agree with that.
It's okay. We don't have to agree, which is the central tenet of any adult conversation.
For sure.
But when you listen to like, basically like anything on Death Row that is highly influenced by like the soul samples and everything that Dr. Dre was doing, is much more musicality.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about just the sampling and what you like, I think, because there's other albums. Like there's so many like sampled and very musical albums from other artists, but the Dre era was definitely a lot of like George Clinton and G-Funk and that very specific kind of sample.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask you a very specific question.
Okay.
I want to find out the exact moment that you saw the California Love video for the first time.
It was probably at the Boys and Girls Club, because that's where I would go after school all the time. And they had like a TV and they would have like TRL or they would have Big Tigga, The Basement, like, you know, like those kind of shows. So I probably saw it there. I don't remember the first time I saw that video, but I do remember the day he died was like, I was like at school and I was crying all day. And it was the first time that like someone that I didn't know had died that affected me that deeply. But I literally like was crying. Yeah. Especially because like he died so violently, and you know, until this day, there's so many theories and ideas about how he died. You know, I have my personal ideas. Everyone kind of has their own ideas, but it's fucked up, man. I mean, both of those men they died in 96 and 97, and there's still no definitive, you know, it's crazy. Two of the most famous men on earth.
It's such a waste of talent.
I mean, yeah. I think that, I mean, I don't know that Tupac would have continued making music. He might have, but the way that he was moving, I think that he was going to be more political and more of like a, somebody involved in like social movements. Because his star was, I mean, was only going up, you know, even after he did the bad things, even after he went to jail and, you know, the whole rape thing and like physical violence, like even after all that stuff, people were still, you know, like flocking to him. So I don't know. I don't know. I mean, obviously, like, I think he would have had a really hard time in the Me Too movement. But, yeah, I don't know. I think he's one of those guys that's just, he's always got something to say. And I think he would have been, like, out in the front lines marching. And
I think he's, like, one of the most talented people ever. I think, I think one thing that hurts Tupac is, like, the production.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the way that Tupac's vocals are produced is, like, clearly, like, augmenting his ability.
Yeah,
the way that he's overdubbed twice, every Tupac track has basically two vocal tracks, and you know, it's great for like effect, but I think like looking back, listening back to it now, we're like okay, like a lot of this is teamwork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of what, there's very few people that are just their voice is their voice. I mean, especially nowadays. But yeah, he was the best, man. But I want to hear more about the story of Dave though. This is about Dave, this podcast. Tell me about when you started your podcast and why. Take the Rope.
Take the Rope started six or seven years ago in the same Bally's that I was working with. Mopolo moved to California to go to grad school at Stanford. Jim Harbaugh was coaching Stanford at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we became friends. And then Jim Harbaugh went to the 49ers, the team that I support. And then we would go to the gym and we'd probably be there for like an hour. We'd probably work out 20 minutes. And the other 40 minutes, we would just talk about football. And then, you know, as a lonely child, I would listen to the radio like all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So when podcasts started, it was like a natural thing that I would like listen to. So I was kind of like an early adapter to podcasts. Like I was listening to podcasts way before Serial.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Serial hit and there were all these articles about like podcasts are blowing up, I was like, no, podcasts are going to blow up. You just happen to be into, you know, journalists taking advantage of murdered women to talk about
yeah,
the people who kill them instead of memorializing the victims of these brutal crimes. Talk about you, Netflix. This whole culture of like, let's catch this killer is just messed up because it only increases the visibility of people who do terrible things and does nothing to support those that are still mourning the victims of these crimes. But that's another podcast.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyways, I was kind of like into podcasts. I was spending all this time with Mopolo at the gym talking about football. And then one day we just bought a Blue Yeti and started a podcast. And, you know, we didn't even know nothing about audio production. And we kind of did it for, I think, like 2 or 3 years. And then then Ray Rice happened and then concussions happened. And football was kind of brutal. Like, it was hard to talk about the NFL because it wasn't fun.
Mm-hmm.
So then I think we kind of like ran our course. And then we just kind of stopped. We didn't even talk about stopping. We just kind of like stopped doing it. And then of course the pandemic strikes and we're all just sitting around and then it was like, look, let's just do this.
Couldn't get in your gym time. So you had to do it virtually.
Yeah. So,
you and Mopolo have a really good dynamic. I think you're both like the way that you guys like think about sports is so outside of the box. And it's interesting to me because I don't, like, I'm kind of dumb. Like when I watch sports, I'm not thinking of the numbers or like plays, or I'm just like, go my team. I'm going to eat more nachos. And like, but when you two talk about it, it's almost like a science, you know, like I feel like, I mean, it's also a lot of just shit talking, but,
yeah,
but you two have like a very, like an interesting dynamic, I think.
Well, I think the good thing about, and I have to give credit, like Chris is basically our third, vocal talent. And then we are blessed to have, Aaron Pressman, Mopolo's fiance, helping us with our social media. So we've kind of grown from like a two-person tag team product to a four-person project, which has made a big difference because as I mentioned on our show, when you have a two-person project, it's very easy to quit because it only takes one handshake. Yeah. When you involve like three people, it's much harder. You kind of feel like you have to keep it going.
I mean, bringing in Chris was a solid move. I think he's eye candy, you know, best looking of the three. Oh. You know, but give him a little front and center on that social media and you guys will be packing him in, dude.
Oh, 100%. I mean, Mopla's a pretty good looking guy too. Uh-huh. I'm definitely like, I'm only here for the vocal talent.
Hey, that's why we chose radio, bro. We got a face for radio. I'm right there with you, bro.
But no, it's been a lot of fun. I think we're older now, and I think, well, let me get back to the question. I think me and Mopolo are a good team because we have competing interests in the podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm always trying to make the podcast as weird as possible to just push the envelope basically, like, look, I'm just there to try to get five jokes off an episode.
Yeah.
That's what I think that's what I'm trying to do. And I think Mopolo is a very organized person, is very intellect structure.
Uh-huh.
So I think the dynamic of two people trying to drive this podcast towards their natural desires makes it interesting.
I mean, the other thing that I appreciate about your dynamic is he's a masshole, you know? And those Boston people, man, they love to just fucking talk about Boston sports. And I just love that you're there to like give it a little jujitsu, you know what I mean? To like use his own weight against him sometimes. And especially this season. I mean, shout out to Mopolo. He's a great dude. But this season, like, just seeing the Patriots be bad and the Red Sox, it's been a wonderful year for non-Boston sports fans.
Eris, this is a very unbecoming take from you. I always consider LA to be a city with no rivals.
Oh, stop, bro.
Like, the Northern California LA thing doesn't exist.
That's not real.
It's just that Northern California is so insecure about its status among great cities that it basically creates this rivalry. No one in LA should be concerned what anyone else in this country thinks of them.
Yeah. I mean, we do hate Giants fans. That's real. But that's been eclipsed by Houston Astros fans. That's the enemy now for, I mean, maybe some people will let it go because we won a championship, but I know for at least the next year or two, when people can go back to the stadiums, oh, those are going to be glorious games of just, you know, fat homeboys in the outfields talking shit to Astro fans. And it's going to, I mean, I'll be one of them. I can't wait.
I feel like nobody has benefited more from Trump instigating an insurrection than Astros fans. So you're like, oh, wait, a baseball team tried to cheat? Well, let me tell you about the president of the United States.
I'll tell you who won the last 4 years is fucking whoever makes flags, bro. Those people are millionaires. How many goddamn flags do Trump people need?
Some Indian company was just pumping these things out.
Balling, bro. So much money. When I was seeing their insurrection, I was just like, what is with white people and flags? Every war, every movie you watch, like these like Braveheart or these like, you know, Gladiator, whenever they're fighting like barbarians, they all got these fucking flags. I'm just, what's up with the flags, man? Why do white people like flags so much?
Well, white people like to, historically speaking, white people have fought wars by lining up against each other, mm-hmm, and just running into each other full steam ahead. The dumbest
USA, USA.
Dumbest shit ever. Let's line up and last man standing. And so basically, militarily speaking, I'm not a military historian, but mm-hmm, the flag is to keep people organized.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense.
But no, look, if you have to wear the merchandise of your political point of view, you're a jerk off.
Wait, you don't have a Biden hat and flag in front of your house right now?
I support Biden. I support ideas. I believe that every person in this country has the right to health care. I believe that every child in this country, regardless of income, has the right to an equitable education. I believe that every person that wants to work should have gainful employment. We shouldn't basically have a modern day version of slavery where, you know, a single mother has four jobs just to keep her one bedroom apartment. You know, these things are not okay. And Biden agrees with some of the ideas that I agree with. Also, he's not Trump, so I support him. But this idea that Trump, who has no political philosophy of any kind, is just someone that you're going to blindly support because he looks like you and talks like you, is honestly a bigger problem than the Trump presidency. It's wild to me.
I think it's funny how many of the people from the insurrection are just like disowning him now because he didn't like get them forgiven when he left office. Like they thought they were going to get pardons, and he was just like, nope, see you later. It's like, well, yeah, yes, this is what you could have expected from your abusive, you know, boyfriend, or however you want to look at what he is.
Look, let me know when you want to start the podcast where two people who grew up in a cult analyze the Trump cult. Let me know. Even if we just do like three episodes, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I love it. People know I'll shit on him until the cows come home. And I'm no big fan of Joe Biden either, dude. Joe Biden's like a human magic eight ball. You shake him and he's going to change his answer. Like, I'm not a big fan of his either. I was definitely a Bernie guy. But that's a whole nother podcast. But I see, especially in a lot of my friends' parents that are still church people, how easy it was for Trump to just take them and, you know, make them his, because they were just conditioned for, you know, 30, 40 years.
Well, here's the thing, and please disagree with this, but there's two kinds of people in the world, two kinds of people in power. There's people in power with ideas, and there's people in power with enemies. And if you don't have any ideas and you're an aspiring politician or an aspiring business leader, just create enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can either inspire people with ideas and new thinking, or you can rally them behind this collective fear towards mm-hmm. An enemy. The idea that the richest country in the world has a significant portion of citizens who are afraid of South American asylum seekers at the border, sleeping on the sidewalk, hoping that someone will let them come into this country lawfully. It is 100% lawful to seek asylum. And it's sad.
Yeah, it is sad.
And, you know, I know I hate when people say this is not America. This is 100% America. This is a mm-hmm. country founded by slaves who expanded by taking advantage of the indigenous people. This is America. This is what we do.
Yeah.
But we can either choose to make progress in amending these issues, or we can just do what we've been doing, which honestly isn't working for anybody.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same, and I feel like now's the time to do the work if we're really gonna do the work, like to create change, to whatever it is that people think America is. If you really want to create that, we have an opportunity to create it. If not, you know, you could just keep pretending that you're a Christian and that you're, you know, you're super sexist, bigoted, racist, xenophobic views are your choice and they don't affect anyone else.
I don't
understand. We can just keep pretending if we want, but everyone knows what's up, you know?
You can be a Christian. You can live by the words of Christ and work to make this world a better world for your fellow man, or you can be a Christian who just thinks the whole point is to be an asshole and get resurrected when you die.
Yeah, that's really
the choice. That's the choice that we all make. You can either use the tools that we have to make yourself feel better about your own mortality, or you can use what we have to make this world a better place for everyone else. And I did youth ministry for a long time, and I can tell you that I think the point is to make the world better for other people.
Yeah, that's, I mean, my basic political foundation comes from just how I was treated my whole life and how I want to treat other people based on how I was treated. And yeah, to me, that's very simple. And there's no red or blue side. It's I read what you're doing and either you're doing that or you're not. You know what sure. I mean? But yeah, anyway, I don't know how we got there, but I was trying to fast track to you becoming a chiropractor.
Okay.
that was the long way around, my brother.
I was at the gym, and then a chiropractor opened a practice inside the gym. I was working there for a year, and I basically saw this guy in his practice like every day for a year, and I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. I was also like struggling in school. Like, I failed trig. I was barely attending. I was like passing classes by the skin of my teeth. I think like college biology, I showed up like five times and somehow got a C in that class. Like, I was not a good student. I wasn't focused. It wasn't my priority. I also had no clue how to study. So Anyways, I finally get out of Chabot and I'm thinking like, all right, this dude's situation seems pretty cool. And I don't have to take calculus. So.
Man, I was so bad. I finished school doing high school math. You ever heard of high school math?
Dude, no shame in that. I started college doing like addition and multiplication.
Yeah. My last schooling in math, I was dividing fractions in a class and we weren't allowed to leave or use a hall pass during our class. That's we were pretty much those kids. Like, bro, that's the last math I ever did.
I mean, when I say this, it's going to make sense why it took me 5 years. The first English class I took in college was about like, what is a sentence? I was homeschooled and it was pretty brutal. My parents were never home. It's like homeschooling should not happen. Mm-hmm. So I didn't learn anything and I was like a raw product. I thought I was like a complete fucking idiot, like most of my life. Because I was just like completely raw, undeveloped, person. So, yeah. So anyways, I get to Cal State and then I think I should do this. I major in kinesiology, which is retarded. Basically, I'm like have student debt to do judo and play basketball with the basketball team. But anyway,
that's what you do, like to learn about the human body.
You take anatomy. Like, here's the problem. Like, anatomy and physiology is way too complicated for anyone to do anything useful with it. If you're gonna like go into medicine or medical sciences, you need a graduate degree anyway. Mm-hmm. You might as well like study biology or like do something more rigorous. Kinesiology is like the history of dance was like a class I took. History of women in sports. That class was actually good. I highly recommended it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, other than that, I spent a year playing basketball with the men's basketball team. I did judo. I had to go. I'm like terrified of sharks. I had to take this swimming class.
Uh huh. Wait,
the pool. I was like afraid of sharks in the pool.
In the pool, you were. This is becoming a theme for the Aris Meyer podcast. People not knowing how to swim.
No, I know how to swim, but I would like be in this pool, like swimming laps, and then 5 minutes in, I'd be like, "Holy shit, there's a shark in this pool."
In the pool.
Yeah, completely.
Bro, that homeschooling is strong, dude.
No, for force.
Oh my god.
Anyways, so and then eventually I got out of there, and then I started chiropractic school. I learned how to study.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated. After I graduated, I started working in the practice that was in the gym. Hated it because they didn't charge enough. Was like, and then eventually, like my biological mom died. I got like a life insurance check and I was like, okay, here's my chance to start a practice. Emailed some people that emailed a dude I had met in sports medicine seminars. And then he let me come down and rent a room in his practice. And that was like in March of 2012. I don't think I saw a patient till October.
Wow.
I had no idea how to like start a business or do any of that.
Yeah. You have to build it, right? Like I feel like I see ads sometimes for chiropractors on social media. And it's always like, they're kind of like trying to do something to differentiate them. You know, like one dude was like dressed like a hipster. Stupid. And one guy had like some gimmicky, you know, like fucking kids toys or.
Yeah. Here's the problem. I mean, like chiropractors, there's like great chiropractors. There's like really shitty chiropractors who just basically tell you that if you don't see them, you know, your back's going to fall apart. You're going to get fucked. And they basically emotionally manipulate you into you giving them like thousands of dollars for this bullshit. But chiropractors don't really exist inside of institutions. So like most of medicine is institutionalized, where like people practice in hospitals where there's oversight and a shared community of ideas. Most chiropractors in the world basically just start an office and have to figure it out, which is good on some level. And it's also problematic on other levels.
Cause there's nobody kind of watching them and making sure they're not taking like, people for a ride.
You're competing with like a physical therapist and a medical doctor. Like you have to say something different. You can't like agree with every, I mean, you should, like you should agree on the science.
Yeah.
But that takes a lot of effort.
So hot take. I've heard some debate mostly on Joe Rogan, but I'm an idiot, so I don't know. Are you a doctor or are you not a doctor?
No, I'm a doctor of chiropractic. I'm not a medical doctor.
Yeah. So what is a doctor of chiropractic? I never went to college. I'm totally I'm
don't, an, don't do this. This is the shit that you do when you have trauma and you don't want it. You're the most well-read person I know. You're one of the best writers I know.
No. But I honestly don't know about doctorates.
It's cool. Don't ever say that again, though. It's not true. I'm one of the most people I know.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I have like a 4-year graduate degree in chiropractic. Chiropractors are primarily primary care of the spine. Like people have spinal injuries or spinal conditions. A chiropractor is a great place to start. We have like the ability to legally diagnose you with a legally binding diagnosis. We can order tests and labs, same as any primary care physician. We can order referrals to spinal surgeons and PT, just like any other primary care physician. We just don't deal with writing prescriptions.
Okay.
Microbiology classes. I took like gastrointestinal pathology. I took a bunch of classes that are very similar to being a medical doctor.
So it's not like an easy, like get your degree in 4 months or online, or it's a practice.
Yeah. It's a 4-year thing where you're like in a cadaver lab cutting up cadavers.
So oh, snap.
It's pretty rigorous. I wouldn't say that like it's definitely not as hard as medical school, primarily because it's terminal. It's not competitive. You're just trying to like get out of there. But yeah, I mean the training is fairly comprehensive. You're basically trained that if any person walks into your clinic, like you can like figure out if they should go to the ER, if they're okay to see you.
How serious though? So what I had a couple years ago, I don't know if I reached out to you or not, but a couple years ago I was moving boxes at my job and I hurt my back, my lower left-hand side of my back. And, I would if I walked for a little bit, I would have to sit down. I couldn't stand for a long time. And I also had pain in my left leg. Yes. So I went to a chiropractor and he was just like, just looking on Yelp, you know, random whatever. And he had like a lot of high stars. But it was weird because I went there and then I talked to the guy. He was like this really cool brother, maybe in his 30s, really built. And, I'm talking to him about, oh, this happened. And he already almost instantly knew what it was before even like looking at me or like moving me in any way. I'm just assuming that's just from reoccurring. Everyone has like, maybe there's like a top 5 injuries that everyone has. I don't know.
Yeah. That's a pretty classic presentation too.
But yeah, it was just weird. Cause I remember, I'm a very I love hugging people. I'm a big hugger, a very affectionate dude. But I remember like he had me lay down on the table thing. Kind of like, you know, with on my back, and he like moved me around to like stretch me and like pop, you know, whatever. Yeah. And I just remember it was the strangest feeling being like a 300-pound dude and having this guy hold me like he would hold his child and just like just jerk me and like pop my back. And it was just weird. As a dude as big as I am, I've never been cradled like a child.
That's so funny because I do that like multiple times a day and I like forget like, oh, I might be like the only person that touches this person.
It's weird, but the thing is after that, so that was like the first time I saw him. And then after that I went back and he had like this bed. It was like a massage bed where you lay down and then there's like one big, you know, wheel that like goes down your back and then circles and goes back. And so I went back and he had me do that and then he was like, that's it. And then he was like, do you want to come back again? And I was like, if I come back again, what are we going to do? And he's like, oh, I'm just going to have you sit on this, you know, do the same thing. And I was just like, oh yeah. And then I just never went back. Cause I was like, well, what am I doing this for? Like,
that's pretty dumb. Like you have to make a recommendation.
I was like, if I come see you and I don't feel better, like why would I come back? Like that don't make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like a patient education issue.
Yeah. But it was, that's like my only interaction with
eventually.
Yeah. So it took like a month. Yeah. No, I'm Professor X over here. It never went away. No, it took about a month and a half. And then I would have to sit down a lot. I couldn't walk very far. And then I started wearing a back brace and that back brace helped immensely. So maybe after 2 weeks of wearing that back brace, I was back to being able to walk for longer periods of time. And, you know, like it eventually, after he told me what it was, I did my own research and kind of like what I should do. And But I've heard a lot of different. The reason I'm bringing it up is because I've heard a lot of positive and negative things about chiropractors.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. Like, I think that's, I mean, I don't know. Like, I also have, I have strong opinions about a lot of chiropractors. A lot of it is just like a business, and it's, they're not actually like, keep, you know, like they have to pay like the rent from the staff. So a lot of times they're not putting the patient's interest first, mm-hmm. which is frankly like why my practice wasn't like particularly successful, because I wasn't good at that.
You're not good at grifting people?
No, not definitely not.
Yeah, that, having a conscience is a motherfucker, ain't it?
It really, I mean, anybody can be present without a conscience. That's what I mean. my advice is like, if you're going to go to a chiropractor, you should ask some fundamental questions. Like, what's my diagnosis? How long is this going to take? What can I do at home? I think that's a good place to start. Like, make sure that they have a plan for you. Mm-hmm. And it's not just like a massage where we'll figure it out as we go along.
Mm-hmm. And is it, in your opinion, just for the people listening at home, in order to not have to see a chiropractor, what are some things that people can do to kind of like take care of themselves? I mean, stretching, walking, eating certain things.
Number one thing that you can do is realize that like everybody has pain. Pain's part of the, like the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you're in pain doesn't mean it's interesting or you should go see somebody about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I spent so much of my day like just listening to people who are in pain, and then they want to tell a story about their pain. Like, what do you think happened? Like, I don't know. I wasn't there. You were there. You tell me what happened.
Yeah.
But
that's how people are. That's how I was when I hurt myself, when I was talking to the chiropractor. Like, well, I was asking him, like, what do you think? He's like, I don't know.
That's fair. You had like an actual pathology.
Yeah. I was actually hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
No, I think like accepting that pain is a part of life and, learning from your pain instead of trying to avoid your pain is probably useful. Sitting is death. Like the less you can sit, the better. There is no good sitting position. All sitting is bad for you. So, you know, getting up to stand up every hour, every 30 minutes is probably a good idea. Staying hydrated, not smoking, you know, the basics.
Does smoking affect your bones?
Smoking damages your blood vessels. So when you damage your blood vessels, it's much more difficult to recover from any kind of injury, whether it's an injured back or a sprained ankle, because you're damaging the microvasculature, and then you actually need nutrients and blood and an inflammatory response to heal. So that can get in the way of healing.
I see.
Smoking is terrible. Smoking is brutal.
Yeah. How often do you recommend that people use CBD or THC, or do you not at your practice?
Yeah, I don't have a recommendation. Whatever feels comfortable for you, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to think of, you know, a way that we can keep your business afloat without you having
I'm good.
You know what I mean?
I work at a federally funded health clinic now.
Never mind. Well, no, they're coming too. They'll be selling weed. Give them a month or two before Biden makes it federally legal, but.
Yeah.
That'll be the biggest pusher. Just wait. The U.S. government. Cool, man. Well, I'll ask you a couple more questions before we get out of here. I've after a little bit of feedback from some listeners, I decided to do a little lightning round at the end of each episode. Sounds where I'm good. Just going to ask you a couple of questions off the top of your head. And let's find out some things. First question. Death row, last meal. Go.
Korean barbecue.
Really?
100%. Korean food is the best food. Korean food is the southern food of Asian food.
Hot take.
It's basically like pickled vegetables and protein and it's spicy. So I'm going Korean barbecue.
That's a good call. Do you eat all the banchan? Do you eat everything?
Oh, I eat everything.
Even the little fishies that are like look like fishies and they're looking
those
at you?
Those fish are great.
Oh, that's the worst part.
This is the best thing that happened growing up in a Korean cult in America is like Korean food at an early age. Korean food is basically like my comfort food. I love Korean food.
Yeah, Korean food is the bomb, and it's such a good communal food. It's almost a perfect communal food.
Oh yeah, there's no better place to take your friends than Korean barbecue.
Would you be the first white American in the history of time to request Korean barbecue for their final meal before execution?
I'm sure it's happened before. Korean food's great.
Oh man. Now, I want to Google that now. All right, next question. You are laying in your casket. there's a big, your funeral is going on. They carry you out. They're about to drop you into the ground. What song are they playing?
Muzzle by the Smashing Pumpkins. It's basically about immortality.
Oh, that's a good, man. You're coming with some good stuff.
I think that people are way too afraid of pain and they're way too afraid of death. Without death, there is no life. Hmm. If we live forever, this is like one of the major problems. Well, I don't know. I don't really want to get into this, but part of the reason that Christianity is so popular is because so many people are suffering and they want to believe that if they have this rich religious experience, that it will grant them something after this suffering that they're dealing with, this hard life that they have. They want to believe that through their commitment to this thing, that it affords them some kind of better reality. And the sad part about it is that there is no better reality. This is reality. This is what we have.
Yeah.
There's nothing after this. And I think if we cherish this experience, we would treat each other better instead of believing that, you know, I have to live this facade of a life and ultimately something great will happen after.
Yeah. I 100% agree with you. I'm a big fan of Ram Dass, and his big quote is, be here now. You know, you can't control tomorrow or yesterday, but right now in this present moment, you can love who you want to love. You can, you know, you can lay under a tree, you can go for a run, you can eat Taco Bell, whatever you want to do. Like, now is the time to do it. There's no other time. And that does, I mean, yeah, that's a larger conversation about Christianity and the offer of an immortal party after this one's over, because this one's so bad, instead of like just making sure that this is the best it can be for everyone, which would be the Christian thing to do.
Jesus was alive and he talked about treating each other better. And then he died and people made up a story, and that's what people think is important about Christianity.
Yeah, I love how Jesus died and he was like, love everyone, even the least among us. Leave all of your treasures. And then everyone's like, what did you say? Did you say slavery? Inquisition? We're going to the Holy Land to kill a bunch of people? Is that what you were saying, Jesus? Oh, he died, so we lost it.
Fast forward 2,000 years, and the biggest church in the country won't accept citizens in the middle of a hurricane.
That, and he got a PPP loan. That I'll never. The fact of Joel Osteen's church, literally the doors closed. Just a picture of the closed doors. It said everything the fuck that needs to be said about religion in America. Yeah, that's
about religion, but we should focus on what a life of faith enables you to do in service of your fellow man.
Hmm.
If you're doing that, then I'm with it. If you think that somehow this makes you, grants you some kind of like thing, you know, I don't know. Having said that, Hillsong has some bangers.
Oh my God, for real? You like Hillsong?
No, I mean, I like some of this.
He said no. I like gospel music. I like Kirk Franklin.
I like how the dude from Hillsong was hanging around Justin Bieber. Everybody was like, this is kosher. Like, as soon as that was happening, like, yeah, this dude's a fraud.
I didn't like that. I got serious, like, Macaulay Culkin, Michael Jackson vibes. I didn't like it. It just seems codependent and awkward. And I mean, that whole, like, I grew up in South Orange County, so there's so many of those, like, white, hip, cool Christians that like come from middle or upper class backgrounds that like never really had problems in their life, but you know, they got a drug addiction and they overcame it, so now they wear ripped jeans and tight shirts and tell everyone how the Lord changed their life. But it's just, yeah, it's its own kind of Christianity.
I'm fine with that, but go do something to help your help.
Hey, they go to Mexico sometimes and, you know, give people books.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, so last question before we get out of here. And it's a doozy. What is the worst movie ever made?
I think all the Marvel movies are garbage.
All the Marvel movies are garbage.
Yeah.
Wow, that is. We're gonna need another 2 hours to break that one down.
Here's the issue with the Marvel movies. It's based on comic books. Comic books are renowned for being artistic, well-written, compelling, interesting. And then the Marvel movies come out. Looks like the graphics are terrible. The special effects are brutal. I watched Endgame last night, and half the characters look like they're not even in the same, like, room. It looks brutal.
But did you watch Wonder Woman?
I watched Wonder Woman, and it's equally terrible. Look, wow. We live in a monoculture. Of course I've seen all these things.
Yeah. That's a hot take. I think Endgame is one of the best movies ever made.
I don't think it's a bad movie. I just think these movies look terrible. And then The Mandalorian comes out and everyone's like, wow, this new technology where we film people in a real space that looks like the space they're supposed to be in, and it looks great. Oh, so you mean you invented just like television? What are you talking about here?
Like, practical the idea effects.
We made bad effects with computers that look terrible most of the time. And then some guy's like, we actually just shoot this with a real background that looks like the space. And people are like, wow, this guy's a real genius. Like, guys, this is what we've been doing with in the beginning.
Yeah. If you watch like the original Star Wars movies and then you watched the prequels, nowadays the prequels look so bad on a regular TV because the graphics are still, you know.
Look, this is
Windows 92.
I'm going to take it back. Everyone that loves the Marvel movies, cool your jets. The most disappointing movie of all time is The Phantom Menace. That movie is brutal.
That's your number one, The Phantom Menace?
I don't know if it's the worst movie of all time, but it's the most disappointing.
The first time you saw it, you were disappointed in theaters?
Yeah. Isn't that the first prequel movie?
Yeah, it is the first prequel movie.
Where you're like, oh, Star Wars, a movie about Al-Qaeda in space, taking over and defeating the Death Star. And then you're like, oh, this is about like senatorial procedures? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, it was. I feel like everybody liked it the first time they saw it. And then everyone was like, oh, this movie sucks. Oh, yeah. And everyone just jumped on the bandwagon of this movie sucks. But I feel like when it came out, people liked it.
Imagine like a trilogy of movies about World War II. And then the prequels are basically like post-war financial policy in Germany. Like, what are we what's happening? Why are you doing this?
Post-war with Natalie Portman, though. So
that was definitely the best part of the movie.
All right, man. Is there anywhere that people can find you? Do you want people to find you on social media, follow you on anything?
I believe my handle is TTR at TTR Dave. Take the rope, Dave. Download our podcast. Don't even listen to it. Just play it with the volume on zero when you go to sleep on repeat. Help us out here.
And how do people find your chiropractic practice? Or is that for it's private cool, man. People you can't only? Find
me. I'm cool.
Oh, okay. All right. Damn.
You can't find my office. I mean, if you really want to see me, Bay Area Health Center in Fremont, California.
Fremont.
You can look up our number.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm swamped. Like,
yay, area.
People in need of care.
Yeah.
And
well, I just want to point people your way. You know, if they, who wouldn't like to talk sports and Tupac when they're getting their back fixed, you know?
Oh, I don't talk to my patients.
You put on headphones or what?
When you have a business, you basically like feel like you have to make sure that people are engaged. But now it's like, look, this isn't my business. I just need to like do the best I can for these people. I'm not like psychologically involved in entertaining them anymore.
Oh my God. All right. Well, on that note, I'd like to thank everyone for listening. Thanks, Dave, for coming on.
All right, Eric. Sorry, this is probably like by far the most meandering episode you've ever done. I'm sorry about that.
No, I appreciate just the diversity of conversation. We, you know, talking about different things, and to me, it's interesting. So hopefully, it is for the listener too. But it's been a pleasure. I enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, good to have you. Thanks for having me.